Hey, welcome to the CEO Anonymous podcast with Pradeep Sangha, a captivating platform designed for CEOs, business owners, and entrepreneurs like you. Our goal is to provide insightful answers to your burning business or personal performance questions. So join our panel of experts as they share their powerful wisdom and expertise. We greatly appreciate your participation. And to submit your questions, simply go to askpradeep.com. Now let's get to the show and delve into the heart of today's question. So I'm super excited to cover this question today that was sent in by one of our audience members. Thank you again for tuning in and sending in these questions, because that's what makes this podcast tick. So this question is, what are the top three things business owners can do to get PE firms to pay top dollar? So that's a really interesting question. It's a hot topic here. And I'm excited to have Nick Bradley with us today, who is the founder of High Value Exit. It's a consultancy firm that does some really cool things. I'm going to let him talk about it, because I'm not going to be able to do it justice, but he's an expert in this area, and he's going to tell you the top three things you can do if you're considering selling to a PE firm. So Nick, thanks for joining me here today.
Hey, Pradeep. It is an absolute pleasure to be on the show. And what a great question. It's not going to be three things. I've got 15. Is that all right? No, I'm joking.
So it's what we call this is a multi-million dollar. It could be, you know, worth a lot more than that.
Question. Well, yeah, I often say that getting this right is tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars that people leave on the table. And quite frankly, most of the clients that I work with and businesses that I've been involved in, they are leaving sums like that on the table. So I think this will be extremely valuable for whoever asked the question, and obviously for the people tuning in.
Well, you know, it's funny, just on a kind of a little bit of a side note here. I want people to know your background, where you come from, so they understand why you're an expert in this area. But my brother-in-law was just over for the weekend, and he's a plastic surgeon, and he's got a great clinic, one of the top clinics here in Toronto. And we were just having a conversation and talking about his plans. He's expanding now. And then said, what are you planning on doing? He's like, you know what? I'm probably going to get out of this in about 5 years and do something different. And I said, cool. So just let me know when you're ready, because I can help you out. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, this is what you need to do if you're thinking about selling. So who are you thinking of selling to? He's like, well, there's this one private equity company. And it was interesting because he had no clue what I did. And he's like, oh, you can actually help me increase the value? I'm like, yeah. But here, we're going to make you shine here, Nick, today, because you have a wealth of experience when it comes to this, because you had the in with private equity companies, right? You were one of the guys. So please share a little bit of background.
Yeah, happy to kind of go into this. I won't go too far back, but I think it's important to understand the context. So I started my career actually working for Rupert Murdoch and News International. So one of the biggest corporate companies in the world, if you want to put it that way, but very acquisitive company, does lots of deals, transactions. You know, a lot of these businesses, you don't see everything that's going on inside, but they're always wheeling and dealing. You know, a lot of the greatest entrepreneurs of our time are great deal makers. So I ended up learning a lot from that experience. I reported into Lachlan Murdoch, who was Rupert Murdoch's nephew, and got involved in M&A there. And then I started working for a competitor in Sydney. I grew up in Sydney, Australia, called EMAP. And they were actually a British company that had a foothold in the Australian market. And I ended up working there for a while and then transferring to the UK, helping them do deals as well, acquisitions of media brands and products. And I stayed at that company for about, almost a decade actually, doing deals across those different things. But we broke that company up in 2008. So it was one of the last big exits, if you like, before the market crash, the global market crash. And it was a plus $2 billion exit. Well, call it breakup more than that, because the business was sold in its components, some to private equity, some to private buyers, a huge deal, huge transaction.
Was that mainly an asset sale?
It was basically different. There was three major divisions. So it wasn't so much an asset sale. It was breaking up the divisions into individual components. Okay. And the one that I was involved in, interestingly, got sold to a group in Germany called Bauer Media. And I'll tell you a very quick side story, because it's funny. When I was involved in the presentation of the company, there were all the private equity firms were there, and usually they'll send in everybody, right? So you have a room full of, you know, really sharp guys with great MBAs and finance guys and everything else. Like, so you'll be presenting to like 10 to 15, 20 people, something like that. But when we were presenting to this family, there was literally two people there. So there were all these seats and two people. I think, what's going on here? And it's one of the largest sort of media empires still in existence that's privately owned. And when the transaction was done, the founder sent his guy literally with a briefcase. It wasn't, you know, handcuffed around his wrist, but it might as well be. And out of that, they pulled out a checkbook and they signed the check. And it was a 10-figure check.
Wow. Wow.
Can you believe that? That's crazy, that's isn't it?
Crazy. That is so crazy. Wow.
So anyway, I left after that because I didn't really want to be part of that. After working in sort of the cut and thrust of that type of business, I decided to move to New York, and I work for Getty Images. And Getty Images is one of the famous stories of a buy and build. So it's been bought and sold, I think, 5 times. It's been publicly listed. It's been bought back by private equity. When I was there, it was under private equity ownership. And we did, I think it was 46 acquisitions while I was there, all in the space of around 18 months. And the whole strategy was just to buy everything that we possibly could in the sort of stock photography and video music media space, mm-hmm. and then suck it into the tech platform that we'd built. And again, that exit, when I was involved in that, was over $2 billion as well. Massive, massive amount of value created from buy and build strategies. And then after that, to kind of cut the very long story short, I decided to work mainly in the private equity space, going into businesses that needed to be turned around, scaled up, anything that was helping the private equity firms get the value from what they'd invested in. So I learned a lot about the way private equity worked from that, because I was the kind of entrepreneur in residence to some extent. And then I ended up becoming an operating partner for some of those private equity firms, meaning that I was overseeing the acquisitions that they brought in, portfolio companies, and guiding and mentoring the leadership teams of those companies, again, to drive really, really fast growth and scale. And for those that haven't sort of experienced the world of private equity, there's really only one main metric that matters. Obviously, it's a buy low, sell high strategy, mm-hmm. but it's what we call return on invested capital, or multiple on invested capital. And, you know, private equity is designed to buy a company, bolt other companies to it, and then get anywhere between a 3 to 5 times multiple on that investment. So the best way to think of this is, if I put 100 million into a group of companies through acquisition, I'm expecting to make 300 to 500 million back on that, usually within a 3 to 5 year window. Mm-hmm. So crazy stuff. So headline summary is this: I've done over 100 acquisitions and 26 exits in my career. Mentioned a couple of the big ones, but the majority are within the sort of 8 to 9 figure range. And from that, I've learned what I call the playbook of private equity. So what does private equity do that other people don't do, that they can learn to do in their businesses? And if they understand how to reverse engineer that, then they can have, as we started this conversation, you know, lots of money given to them as opposed to being given to the private equity firms.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, such an extensive background there. That's pretty powerful. Now, I just have a question, which is completely a side note here. When it comes to Getty, from my understanding, because I haven't done a lot of research, my understanding was it started from a fund that got the donation from, is that how it worked, from the Getty family?
Sort of, yeah. So there was two main founders, and I joined it a number of years after. I wasn't there at the very beginning. I joined in 2009. But there was Mark Getty, who was kind of from the family. And then you had Jonathan Klein. Jonathan Klein was the guy that I spent most of my time with. Now, my understanding is they were investment bankers. So they met in that kind of world. Whether they met through an MBA school or whatever, I'm not 100% sure. But they joined forces and they said, listen, we can see a market that is ripe for disruption, because stock photography back then was literally CD-ROMs mm-hmm. of pictures getting sent around by the mail. I kid you not. And what they did is they turned this into a tech business. And so if you said to me, what was Getty? Was it really about stock photography? Or no, I'd say it was a tech business based out of Seattle, close to Microsoft at the time. And its growth was all about just buying up assets and bolting them into the technology. Mm-hmm. Really fascinating. Yeah. Great experience. I've got to say, it was one of the most amazing stints of my career. I was only there for about just under 3 years, but geez, it was pretty awesome.
Pretty fast paced.
Oh yeah.
That's pretty good.
Knocking around.
So let's just jump right into it. So let's talk about those three things or more that you would like to let the audience or listeners know to help them increase the value of their business.
Yeah. So I'm going to kick off, because as I said, I wasn't joking when I said there were 15. I mean, I did a whole podcast on this because, you know, the way I look at this is, if I was a private equity guy coming into your business, there's a number of different things I'm going to do. But when I get into the cut and thrust of it, I'm going to run a due diligence process and I'm going to be assessing the business against a number of criteria. And it's very rigorous, right? And so there is a lot of detail that goes into that. There's also a lot of cost and time that goes into that, right? Because the private equity firms need to de-risk their investment as much as they can from any of their investors, their institutional investors or the like.
Yep.
But to kick this off, I think the first thing I'm going to talk about is transfer value. Now, this is a concept that doesn't get talked about enough, in my opinion. And it's really the high-level transferability of your company to someone else when you decide to sell it. Now, I'll go into what I mean by that in more detail. But most people think that the value of a company is a financial piece. So it's either, you know, the revenue or it's the net profit, the EBITDA, sometimes it's the cash flow. And it's usually a multiple of that figure that defines what people think the value is. So therefore, the majority of business owners just focus on that. If they think they can build stunning financials, they're going to have, in my world, a high value exit. But it's very much a long way away from the truth, right? So transfer value is how you build and structure your business, number of different layers into that, so that when you sell it to private equity, at least 80% of what you could have done with that business is complete and functioning to a high level. Now, the reason I say 80% is that private equity doesn't like to buy something that's fully formed. They like it to have some elements where they can add their value to it. But if your business is not well structured, and I'll explain exactly what I mean by that in a second, then you are going to get a kicker on the multiple in the negative. Okay, so let's say you have a business that's doing 5 million of EBITDA, good business, and the range of valuations in your market is between 5 and 10, just for easy math. If you have a business that's poorly structured, doesn't have transfer value, you'll sell it at the lowest end of the range, if you can sell it at all. Okay, so that could still be a $25 million transaction. That might be fantastic for you. But if you had spent some time preparing it properly and doing some of the things I'll talk about here and some of the stuff that you do, Perdeep, then you have the ability to sell that business for, say, 10 times that multiple. That's $50 million. So straight away, we've got a delta there of $25 million that's on the table that you could have got had you have prepared well in advance. That's what I mean by the transferability of the company.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And it goes to, if you take a look at it, just from my perspective on that one, it's like, if you have an amazing house, but you've customized it to such a degree as well, like you have elevators here and there, you've created tunnels in your home, you've done all these funky paints and stuff, and people walk in, they're like, yeah, this is great. It looks good, but it's not for me.
Precisely.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just going to go, you know, just a little bit deeper so people don't think it's an ethereal statement. Transferability is very much, if I'm going to buy something that is going to continue to run and operate at a high level when I, the founder or the owner, is not there, that's what we're really talking about here. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the way I kind of look at it is, if you or you've got a small leadership team and you're the bottleneck in any form of commercial or operational delivery within the company, then its transferability at a high value to me is compromised. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, as soon as I write a check, you know, for $25 million or more to you, you know, there's you know, the natural psychology that you're less interested, right? And so what I want to make sure is that there are succession, you know, two layers deep in the business. I want to make sure that there's no customer concentration issues. I want to make sure that the brand that you've created over X amount of time is one or two in its defined market. Those sort of things are what I call transferable. There's more to it, but that's certainly the beginnings of it.
Yep. Sounds good. So what else do we got here?
Okay. So that's the first thing. Okay. So you're building a business based on that. Okay. And that takes, just to finish the point, that can take, in my world, 12 to 36 months of proper preparation, planning, and building the machine. Okay. That's the first thing. The second thing, which I think is really important, particularly if you want to go into private equity, is you want to understand some of the stuff I spoke about beforehand, which is buy and build. There is only one growth thesis in private equity, and that is buying a business, which is called a platform. So a platform is defined as the first business that is bought by a private equity firm within a market vertical, within a sector. And then the only thing that they really care about doing after that in the main is buying other businesses and bolting them all together to form a group. Okay, so the ability to understand M&A, mergers and acquisitions, as part of your growth strategy, particularly if you've got a business that's doing, you know, high levels of profit already, is a reasonably sized business, you need to introduce that. Now, you don't have to necessarily go out and do a heap of transactions yourself, but it is valuable, particularly through a sales process, to talk about it, have it as part of your growth trajectory, go as far out as identifying targets that you would go for, and even down to having conversations. Because think about it this way, you're doing what the private equity firm is going to do anyway in advance, so it's less work for them. Plus, you're proving that you as a leadership team, management team, or you as the founder, have the thinking of more scalable exponential growth. And again, most business owners, when they walk into this, are just thinking about, you know, building their business one customer at a time versus something which is much faster and much bigger, which is how the private equity firms tend to operate.
Yeah, that's a really good point there. Knowing who you're selling to and anticipating that, that just makes you that much more of a smarter seller, I would say. I always like to equate things to the real estate market, Nick, because it's easy for people to understand. Yeah,
there's a lot to it. I agree with you 100%.
Right, because most people have either bought or sold a home and they understand. And it's, if you understand what the trend is and who you think is moving into your neighborhood in the next 5 years, you can try to rebuild or renovate or do the things you need to your home to actually sell at a higher value and actually make it more attractive for people to actually want to buy your home. So I think what you said there is bang on. Actually being proactive, figuring out who you might sell to, what is your bolt-on strategy, and seeing how your business can actually fit in there.
Yeah. And well, that my final point actually even builds on that even further. So if I think about the 26 exits I've been involved in, some of them have got some really interesting kind of what I call pivots, if you like, through the process. And what I've learned from that is how you position, similar to what you were just saying, but with a bit of a nuance, how you position your business when you go through the process of taking it to market can add more value than what the business was before you did that. Okay. Now, this is a bit strange, but I'm going to try and explain it. So one of the businesses I was involved in was an education company. But when we were going to sort of what I call pre-market, in other words, not officially on the market, but just kind of learning what's going on, we realized that the multiple range within that specific area was not favorable to what we wanted to achieve. And we were owned by private equity and our goal was to sell to another private equity, which we ended up doing. We ended up going back as a leadership team for about 6 months and repositioning the whole business around data and the usability of data. And we realized that if we could leverage that as part of the main part of the story, then that was going to get us a higher kicker on the multiple. Okay, so there's two things we did there. It's interesting. Firstly, we went out there and looked at the market and we reverse engineered what we wanted to achieve, right? So we had this idea that if we want to sell a business for this amount of money, this level of enterprise value, it needs to be in a different market to where we are now. Then we went back into the business and changed the structure of the business and the positioning of it. So when we went out to market, we could tell that story with a heap of congruency. Now, there's no sort of lies in this because at the end of the day, someone's going to come around and kick the tires on this. But what I think was interesting is that we didn't see the value. Right? We were looking at the business in a totally different way. And once we started to get more externally focused, we saw where the true value was, particularly because we wanted to achieve a certain figure at exit. So the advice here, I think, to people when they're trying to get the highest amount of value, certainly from private equity, is firstly, go out there and be known in the market. Go out there and understand the dynamics of the market that you're in or adjacent markets. Understand what the drivers of value are, but also understand what the detractors of value are. And then as you're learning that, start to look at what you've got in your business and start to reshape that, okay, reposition it. Because one of the most important things when you go and sell a company is what I call win themes, okay? And these are the 5 to 10 statements that position your business as unique and remarkable, right? And standing out versus the sea of other businesses potentially in your industry. So all of that insight, again, comes back to preparation, right? Preparing well in advance and understanding that is going to give you another, in our case, it gave us another 4 points on the multiple and that exit was $2.3 billion. So it was, you can work it out. It was hundreds of millions of dollars just by doing that exercise.
Oh, that's powerful. Now, just on that question on the win themes there, how much of a difference have you seen it make just having powerful win themes?
Well, I think it's the most crucial thing in the first part of the process. So, and just to define it, you never say the term win theme when you're out there pitching. That's an internal statement. Quite often it's called investment highlights, right? Yeah. And it's funny. One of my clients used it the other day when we were in a meeting with a private equity firm, and I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, it's in investment highlights of this guy. But, and the other thing is, like, when you're pitching the business, right, you say the win themes quite often, two or three times through the pitch. So it's not just one thing. But the way I define a win theme is, I'll use an analogy of making like a carrot cake, if you're into that. Like, it's the ingredients that you put together that makes the cake, right? So we might both know how to make a carrot cake, but you might make it a certain way and I might make a certain way. It's the individual components mixed together in a certain recipe that then gets the result, okay? Mm-hmm. So the way I look at it is, any one win theme could be the same as your competitor next door, but it's the combination, the recipe of those win themes that makes you unique and remarkable, okay? Unique and remarkable is important because there's an important thing in private equity where it's a lot about the numbers, it's a lot about the objectivity. But if you understand how to play this well, you can turn the subjective element on. You can turn the emotional element on. Mm-hmm. And I often coin this as, I've been saying this quite a lot recently, the prize versus the prey. And I'm going to just quickly define this because I think it's crucial that people understand it. If I was walking into your business with my private equity hat on, right, I kind of want you to be the prey. Okay. And what I mean by that is, I want you to not understand the value that you've created in your business. I want you to kind of, you know, see enough there that I can pay you a certain amount of money, buy low, to kind of be interested for a period of time. But then I want to take all of those foundations that you've created and I want to turn it into my price. Okay, that's what I want to do. Buy low, sell high. But you can turn the tables on that and you can actually be seen more as the prize. Okay. And the prize is the business that's so beautifully structured, so well crafted, so well defined within its market, that you have multiple private equity firms or other buyers interested, okay? And that turn, that twist, is what's going to get you the highest possible value when you sell your company.
That's powerful there, what you just said. Now, I just have one more question here for you. When you are, in your experience, because you work with business owners as well, you partner with them to help them increase their value and then sell, do you go as far as when you're having conversations with PE firms, do you go as far as saying, hey, look, what are you guys actually looking for 5 years from now or 3 years from now? Do you get that specific? Do you get that specific or do you feel like you're kind of tipping them off? Or do you have those relationships where you can actually ask those direct questions and get that insight?
Yeah, no, I ask the direct questions. Quite often they come back and say that they don't know and they want you to tell them. Mm-hmm. But this is where it gets quite funny. Private equity firms, just the way that they scale companies and the way that they think of value is very clinical. It's almost militant. And so where I think they get a lot of stigma positively is that it is the highest level of value creation. And most business owners aren't really creating value, right? But when you sit there and say, project forward, tell us what the market's going to look like in 5 years, they don't know that. They'll pay you a lot of money to tell you that when they acquire your company. That's what they're kind of doing. What they will do, though, brilliantly, is facilitate how that can all be constructed. You know, they're not shy of leveraging debt to drive growth. They've got very strong networks. Where they are very good is that they'll be talking to all the other private equity firms and anyone else who's acquisitive in the market, and they'll be starting to learn strategies. So the private equity firms themselves don't necessarily come up with those, but what they do is talk to enough people up and down the chain to form hypotheses. And then when they acquire a platform, that first acquisition, they expect you to build on that hypothesis, maybe validate it, but most importantly, to deliver it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you can, and just like you said there, if you're a seller and that you can actually help them create, not necessarily the research, but the roadmap, and have your business be one of those leading, you can say, organizations, that's of extreme value as well.
Yeah. And I'll finish off by saying this, because I think it's important, is that because some people come to me and say, why should I sell to private equity versus other options? And there's two main things. And you have to kind of think about this personally. So if you want to sell your business more than once, okay, often it's called two bites of the apple or anything like that, private equity is pretty much the best way to do that. Okay. And quite often you want to be the platform. So you want to have enough scale that you are that first acquisition. Because remember what I said, private equity, all they care about is you know, getting that 3 to 5 times MOIC and then selling within 3 to 5 years. So you can sell your company once, roll over a percentage of those proceeds into the new entity and then sell the company again. And quite often it's not uncommon for people to make more money on that second exit than they did on the first. So if that's your ambition, private equity is the play. Equally, let's say you're 60 or 70 years of age and you've had enough, you want to make a fair bit of money, but you don't want to keep working. In situations like that, you can sell to a corporate or a strategic, but also a private equity business that's already the platform, and you become that bolt-on acquisition. Because the private equity firm in that situation has already decided who the leadership team is, who's going to drive the bigger entity forward. So you could be that small bolt-on acquisition, get paid really well for that, stick around for a year, maybe a little bit longer, and then go off into the sunset or, you know, drink pina coladas on the beach, whatever it is for you. So private equity works in those two lanes. And I just try and explain it to people. There's no right or wrong. It just depends. And that will also then dictate how you want to build your company towards any of those outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why it's so important for business owners to know what their negotiables are and their non-negotiables. And that's very important there. So Nick, I want to thank you here, but where can people find about more about you? What do you got going on? I don't know if this is public knowledge yet, if you've announced it, but you got something in the works that you're releasing here coming up.
You know what? This is the first conversation where I've actually talked about it. I'm not joking you. You get the scoop. So,
okay, awesome.
So I'll do the easy bit first. So highvalueexit.com is my business, my consultancy. I've got a podcast, which you have brilliantly come and shared your knowledge on, which is called Scale Up with Nick Bradley as well. 300 and something episodes in, started that back in 2019. It's been quite a ride.
Awesome.
But the new thing, the thing that's coming out very soon is my book, my first book that I've written called Exit for Millions. And that's going to be coming out in the next couple of months. We're still finalizing the date, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be the end of November. But I'll make sure I let people know. But Exit for Millions, and yeah, it's kind of the playbook. Some of the stuff we covered today, it's everything that I learned from over a decade in private equity and really trying to educate and help business owners about what this world is like. So that if they want to go down that path, they're armed with everything they need to be successful in that outcome.
I love it. So can't wait to get your book myself. And then we'll have that updated on this podcast episode, because this will be released prior to your book. So we'll make sure that everybody gets that information. So Nick, I want to thank you. Tremendous value here. And I would just, for those of you who have tuned in, check out Nick's work. Phenomenal. Check out his podcast. He knows what he's talking about. If you are thinking about selling to private equity, you definitely want to tune into his work. So I appreciate you being here, Nick. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks very much, Pradeep.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you got value from the show, we have one simple ask. Please go to your favorite podcast platform and hit subscribe. We'll see you next time.